So, good evening, everyone. This has been a particularly difficult day for me. I've been in quite a lot of pain, and I'm probably not the only one that has had some pain today. And I've been feeling quite dim and dull. It seems to be kind of a theme for today. And I thought this might be an appropriate evening for me to talk about how the way does not depend on our knowing or not knowing. Because this afternoon, earlier, as I was contemplating having to give a talk this evening, I thought, wow, I am really not sure I have anything at all to present here. I'm confused, and this thing that I read yesterday that seemed like such a nice thing to talk about, I didn't really know what the heck I would say about it. And here I am. Not having been able to eat anything for the last 24 hours, and here with all of you, and so wonderful to be here. You know, it would be easier for me to just not be here under these circumstances, but I figure, well, you know, I feel how I feel, and I have to be somewhere, so maybe here is the best place for me. And, you know, getting the wonderful opportunity to meet with all of you in Doksan this afternoon, I was quite convinced that that was the right choice. So anyway, this new bit of Dogen from his Shobogenzo, this particular section, Only Buddha and Buddha, and now this bit that is part two in our books. When we reflect quietly, it appears that our body and mind has practiced together with all Buddhas of the three worlds and has together with them aroused the thought of enlightenment. So, on a night like tonight, I find this quite comforting that it isn't actually up to me to practice alone. That we are all practicing together with all of the Buddhas of the three worlds and the great earth. And so Dogen often talks about arousing this thought of enlightenment, and says that so this is the most important thing, is the raising of this Bodhi mind, this thought of enlightenment, this desire for the way. And this bit here says that even that, this arousing of the way, is not something that I can actually do for myself. That it's this practicing together with all Buddhas of the three worlds that arouses this thought of enlightenment. Goes on, when we reflect on the past and future of our body and mind, we cannot find the boundary of self or others. So, for me, this is one of the most important bits of my Zazen practice, is this studying the self and finding that it isn't quite what I think it is. There certainly is this sense of self, right? I'm quite powerful. But taking this opportunity to practice Zazen here on my cushion, there's a wonderful opportunity to watch this idea of self exhaust all of its many strategies. And for this boundary between myself and the world to become a little fuzzier than it normally is. You know, we think that we are independent actors, you know, and that we are responsible for achieving something, attaining something here. And I think one of the wonderful things about Zazen is sometimes we catch glimpses of something else. This by walking into our own experience, feeling our hearts be touched by the world and this life of emotion, and finding that when we really allow ourselves to feel what we feel. When I feel all the range of emotions that come up, for me often around my self-judgments, that I need to be something other than what I am. Just really feeling the difficulty and pain of that, that I never seem to be able to satisfy myself about myself. And you know, I jump immediately to these strategies of, you know, what can I do about this? How can I just be more satisfied with myself? Or, you know, what is the thing that I can do that would accomplish that? And maybe, you know, through the power of this Zazen, we're able to catch these little glimpses, little glimmers of this deeper connection with the whole world. So by what delusion do we believe our body and mind is apart from all Buddhas of the three worlds? Such delusion is groundless. How then could delusion hinder the arousing of the thought of enlightenment and the practicing of the way by all Buddhas of the three worlds? Thus, understand that the way is not a matter of your knowing or not knowing. I want to read to you the little bit that comes right before this in a slightly different translation than the one that we're using here, but I love this little bit. And Dogen says, "The Buddhas of the three times have already, through their practice, accomplished the truth and perfected realization. How then are we to understand that this state of Buddha is the same as us? To begin with, we should understand the action of Buddha. The action of Buddha takes place in unison with the whole earth and takes place together with all living beings. If it does not include all, it is never the action of Buddha. Therefore, from the establishment of the mind until the attainment of realization, both realization and practice are inevitably done together with the whole earth and together with all living beings." So this establishment of the mind, here is the slightly different translation of arousing the thought of enlightenment. And he's saying that right from the beginning of arousing this thought of enlightenment until the attainment of realization, both realization and practice are done together with the entire earth and all beings. That it's not my realization. That this is something that is already accomplished. Zazen is not my individual practice. It's Buddha's practice. Buddha practicing through us. And of course, we need to participate. We need to come sit on our cushions. And we need this willingness to sit still and be present to whatever it is that arises. But there's no need to make effort to construct some particular thing. As a matter of fact, it's just noticing all of those attempts at construction. How would I be able to construct enlightenment? I have no idea. It's not something that can come from within me. And nor is it something that can come in from outside. It's something that is already here, already accomplished. And as Dogen says in the end of this little bit, he says, "Thus understand that the way is not a matter of your knowing or not knowing." Thank you. So, we'll have our Dharma dialogue, and, opportunity for questions, comments. Edward?
First, I just want to thank you for choosing to be here. Mm-hmm. And thank you for that particular talk. It spoke very powerfully to a lot of things that I'm probably processing. I think one of the most useful things for me is that it reminded me that I have a tendency to create different compartments for compassion and awareness. The work of awareness, the work on the cushion, the work of realization easily slides into something that's a private matter that somehow I have to do, I have to attain. Whereas compassion, particularly in a social sense, is very easy to activate. It takes very little more than just being with another human being. And what your talk reminded me of, that these are not separable. And that to see the work of realization, or to see the process or the experience of realization as somehow in a private sphere, while the compassionate side of our practice takes place somewhere else or only tangentially connected, is a very useful thing for me to take away, not just from this evening but from this retreat. Thank you.
And so actually, there is no personal compartment to put it in, right? We're connected to all beings, and as you point out, right, this connection, I mean, all we need to do is pay attention to the suffering of the world in order for this compassion to arise, and this is a really important thing, right? So this is a big part for me of what I'm doing here, is allowing myself to feel the suffering, right? Because I really would like to avoid that mostly, right? But this allowing myself to feel the suffering of myself and the suffering of the world is where this sense of oneness, of compassion, of responsibility comes from for me, right? This is how it arises when I, you know, allow myself to feel. So, thank you, Edward.
I appreciate very much what you said, and that the not practicing the three worlds practicing with us, and that we're not alone, and the whole world is practicing with us. And I mean, you know, it's amazing to me how, and we say at the beginning, we say that take refuge in the Sangha and the Buddha and over and over, and then we're practicing in the group, and yet somehow I'm still all alone with my practice. It feels like, you know, and especially when it gets difficult. Like, when it's difficult, never mind the sense of oneness, sense of just me and my stuff by myself, and I don't feel connected with anyone. I feel like very separate, alone, you know, and I'm sure I'm not alone feeling that way, but and yeah, you know, so it's like, I don't know what it's going to take to break through, you know, just be patient and because it doesn't last, of course.
Right, well, that's the breaking through, isn't it? Right? It doesn't last, right? But it's so powerful, it's so vivid, this sense of self, right? That, oh my God, I don't like what's here, I got to do something about it, and it's up to me to change it. And there's this sense of, oh, you know, I just can't deal with this, but the way that it is, I need to find the thing. And yet if we, and what we're doing here, practicing, right, is just the sitting still in the presence of not being able to do anything about it. Yeah. And something happens when we are able to do that, as you point out, right? That's beautiful. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
And I just love that little phrase that I'm sure I'm not alone.
Yeah.
Alone. Right? This place we go that's so vivid, so runs our life, is so wildly challenging to be with, is actually the heart of this connection, of this poignant enterprise here. And if we can bear it, and as it, or as it bears us, something happens. Right through that Dharma gate. Yeah, thanks.
The thing about not owning the bodhicitta. I keep thinking of an analogy with like practicing piano or music. Like they say, oh, there's no such thing as talent. It's just, it's practice. And I think the thing that is talent is the wanting to practice, and like you don't get to pick what you want. So that's, I mean, you still have to practice and everything, but you can't say I want to practice and make it happen.
Yeah.
And then if you want to, then you can spend your hours that way.
Right. Where so, does that desire come from?
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people have it, some people don't, right?
Right. Yeah. And it's not ours.
Right. We don't own it, right? Who knows where it comes from? Who knows where any of this comes from? Our capabilities, our thoughts, any of it. Where does it come from? And how do I work this thing? We're convinced we can find a way to make it work, right? But we're so reliant on everything else. But we can participate and, you know, we can pay attention to, so what is it that I desire, right? Let's go do that. Maybe it isn't playing piano, or maybe it is.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's the, you can't want something you don't want, but you can remember what you really want. And I think that, and it isn't our want, it's the want of the universe, you know, the want of Buddha, this great way-seeking mind, or this great stubbornness that keeps us from running out screaming in the late afternoon. You know, it's dark and freezing and the mind is totally shot. But we can, from time to time, see so clearly these glimpses you were talking about. And even in the difficulty, there is something... something holds us that's not, and it is such a relief that it's not us. Don't have to manufacture more of this, but maybe clear away, maybe remember coming back again and again. Oh yeah, I want to be awake. I want to get to the bottom of it, whatever it is. Yeah.
And also maybe there's another, just for another view here, that, you know, if, say, practicing the piano is a great analogy here, practicing meditation, we actually think we know why we should be doing it. And we're almost always wrong about it. You know, so we practice the piano because we think we're going to learn about music or get cultured or be able to play this really. And then there's a moment, if any of you are musicians, where in the middle of the practicing, suddenly music happens. And it's like, oh, I didn't know that this was what was going to happen. All my ideas about whatever got in the way of it. And I think the analogy holds for meditation, especially these days when meditation is a thing that you're supposed to do to be healthy, like exercising and eating well, and you know, you should meditate. Some of you might have come to this retreat thinking that and thinking, wait a minute, that's not what I should be happy and peaceful and calm now because it's been days or hours or minutes for some of us. So there's some way that, you know, this thing that Steve and David are, and you're pointing to, Jenny, that we don't know who is the one who's causing us to do it. And we have an idea about why we should do it. And then when the little moment of aliveness arises in the middle of meditation, it's always a surprise. It's not what we thought was going to happen. Right? We make up endless theories about meditation and compassion, you know, and all the stuff that we're talking about. Which is one of the great things about Dogen, because he always cuts through all of our theories and strategies, because we're going along hearing him or reading him, and oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It literally goes, it just turns. And that's what meditation practice is.
Maybe that's, you're chasing that false bait.
Yes. But it doesn't matter.
That's how it gets, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever is making you meditate, that's how it makes you meditate.
Right.
Whatever it takes.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's a real stubbornness in those of us who've chosen this path, I think. And the stubbornness often manifests as clinging to that bait for dear life until, you know, our grip opens and life appears.
Someone once said to me, said, I'm worried that I'm doing this for the wrong reason. And
yes.
I said, of course you are. You don't have to worry about that. We're all doing it for the wrong reason. And that's perfectly fine. Because we need that until you can't know what music is until it comes to you. You can't know. And yet, we do know all the time. Yeah. Great.
Thank you.
Diana.
I've had quite a difficult day as well. Not pain, not physical pain today. But sitting with a broken heart and with these teachings going around, particularly this at-one-ment, this atonement, and my wish for so restart of communication and rekindling of my relationship with my sister, who decided to disconnect completely about 6 years ago, and feeling really that there must be something I can do in the meditation by sitting here and working out how to find that at-one-ment. To find with her, for her, within me, with me, with her, and it was all getting very difficult. And my meeting with Steve helped, and never would have guessed you were having a difficult day at the same time, which touched me now. Having said that this evening, because your difficult day helped my difficult day. Mm. And that connection, that reminding me to that I can be with whatever it is that's arising around this wish to have our connection with my sister and with this, with the pain of that, with the hurt, with the broken heart. and that's helped me through. Helped me just return back to being with what's here and trusting. And that's it. That's all I can do.
Yeah. Well, and as we sit these long days, the mind opens and all of things come to the surface of memories, desires, people, all here. They arise in all kinds of ways, sometimes quite lovely and sometimes quite painful, carry us away and we get lost or it comes up. And I just appreciate what you're saying, that it ultimately it's not about, so the issue comes up and then work that out and then go on to the next one. But it comes and it is what it is, the broken heart and all the impossibility of it and the love and the confusion. And nothing needs to be done.
Right? That's the hard bit.
Yeah.
That's the hard bit.
Right.
You want to so much to do something.
Right. Mm-hmm. But just to hold it in awareness, whatever arises for you is coming for some mysterious reason that we can never know. And our vow is to let it be and hold it as it is, whatever it brings. Say when it comes, don't try to avoid it, and when it goes, don't go chasing after it.
And I think it's important, you know, it's not just that we don't need to do it. We can't. It's impossible. When we think we're doing it, it's just the mind talking to the mind.
Yeah. You know,
the reality of a broken heart. What? Something's going on in the weather. I feel like asking for a show of hands. This is a hard day for me too. Just facing into brokenheartedness. And then watching the mind arise and try to manipulate it, fix it, solve the problem. It really is the mind talking to the mind. And then there's a certain point when we grow weary of that endless mind-chasing mind, thought-chasing thought. And then we sink down into something that's so reliable, that has nothing to do with figuring things out or changing the world or healing relationships even. You know, it's so much more fundamental than that. And it's a very nourishing, loving, compassionate place. But it only comes after we give up strategizing. And as I say this, I'm well aware that people might start thinking, oh, I get it. So now if I want to get to that compassionate, loving place, then what I need to do is just give up. Okay, I'm going to do that now. And there's the mind talking to the mind. This is a true surrender that we've been talking about for a few days. A true surrender. And you can't even surrender. You know? You're just like, yeah, something falls away. What do you think?
Teacher of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's, on that note. What do you think? Let's see.